Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 21st, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Great. And we're also joined by author and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well. Very well. Very well. Well, this is a big day. I guess you'd have to say it's a historic kind of a day. It is a day that will be, I think, remembered along with the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act of 1929 that pushed us into the Great Depression and things like that. But today, the Congress of the United States has passed a tax bill, which is, it's a tax cut bill. And a lot of people don't like it. I suppose a few people do like it. Let me ask you, DR, let me put you on the spot. Tell me, where should we begin our consideration of the, I think, what do they call it? The Orwellian Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017 or something. Mm-hmm. Where do you go with it? What's your analysis?
Well, two of the most controversial provisions, according to Green Tech Media, is that it will lower taxes for fossil fuel companies, and there's a provision of the bill that also allows the drilling of the of Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Reserve, basically opens it up to oil and gas drilling, mm-hmm. which has been understandably a huge bone of contention. There's some speculation that the bill was not as savage as feared to the clean energy industry, but certainly is not going to be viewed as a benefit benefit to that industry for fairly obvious reasons, that the bill is the benefits lean towards more traditional energy sources, the newer energy sources, to put it mildly.
So let me, Mariah, can you describe what your understanding of the, or set us down a path of trying to figure out what the implications are of the tax bill for the clean energy? So again, let's just back up for 1 second. We are putting aside all of the horrific implications of this tax bill. Since we're a climate show, we're going to sort of narrow our focus in a little bit on sort of clean energy issues, right? And so do you have any sense of what the final bill does for renewable energy stuff?
Yeah, so, you know, I read a little something that talked about the original bill that they had proposed had really deep cuts on the sort of federal incentives for renewable energy, mm-hmm. and that they actually did modify that a little bit. I forget who said it, but someone said that it went from extremely bad to very bad. So it's better, but I guess a lot of the, I think Ohio has a lot of wind and maybe Indiana has a fair bit of a renewable energy, and they pushed back on this tax bill to get some of their credits back.
And just to my understanding, this is something called, the acronym is BEAT, tell me if I'm wrong, the Border Entry Abuse Tax. And the idea was that if a foreign company invested in the United States, they were basically going to tax the income at 100%, right? Basically all the income. So that, and the implication for the wind industry is a company like Vestas, right, which is over in Europe, would have no incentive to invest in the United States. Right? Isn't that sort of the background to the thing?
Yeah, that's kind of what I got.
Right. I'm not a high finance guy, but I mean what I heard was that they allowed 80% of the profits to be taken out. So the tax went, I guess, from 100% tax down to a 20% tax, and of course there's a lot of foreign investment. I mean, you know, global capital was the sort of linchpin of a lot of U.S. government strategy for a long time. And so anyway, so yeah, I agree with you. From what I've read, and of course it's only come out in the last few hours, but it's not as horrific. And I guess that speaks to the strength of the clean energy lobby in these Midwestern states, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think there still are going to be, you know, way too many cuts if we plan to keep up with China economically.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I think that the fact, I mean, the bill in this day and age, the fact, as DR said, that the bill continues to support fossil fuel industries and doesn't put any sort of penalty on them is an abomination, right? It's just not right. The right thing to have done. Right, DR?
Right.
It is indeed a good example of what we always say all the time, elections have consequences, and sadly, yes. Not voting has consequences too.
Did you, so we're, I will say again, I will say it 1,000 times over the next few months, but we all have to be ready to vote in 2018, right? That's when you get to take out your vengeance on the people who have done this, who have been so short-sighted. But did you guys see the reports that said that the Virginia, state of Virginia, the state house has shifted to a 50-50 Republican Democratic Party balance because the last election was won by a single vote by the Democrat? Mm-hmm. That it was a one vote difference after it. So if you think your vote doesn't count, right? And of course, it's like that ripples up because that one person voted. That means that the gerrymandering of Virginia will not be as severe in next time around. And it just, I mean, that has consequences that go on for a long time. So please, if you have any doubt that your vote doesn't count, please take that into consideration. So anyway, these jokers have passed the bill, this tax cut bill that does a lot of horrible things. And it does things that are so horrible that you wonder about, at least I wonder about the sanity of the people who propose it. I mean, on what basis can they do something so horrible? And I guess the explanation I tell myself, I'll tell you two guys, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that at the core of sort of, the conservative GOP, I mean, the core of this bill is a belief that people who have money and who have succeeded are deserving of that money. And that they should be given all that money because they are naturally deserving it. And if you don't have that money, then you are naturally either you're lazy or you didn't work hard enough and you don't deserve the money. And therefore, you can be basically screwed by the tax code. And for me, that becomes such a deep issue and a deep belief that I feel like Democrats were arguing, were saying, how can you be so hard-hearted and mean and thoughtless about human life? And these other guys are saying, oh, no, we're doing the right thing according to our own standards. We're doing the right and honest thing. We're protecting the makers who have made the money, and we're protecting them from the takers who just want to exploit the rich people. And that's so fundamental. I mean, I was saying before, it to my mind, it's just simplistic speaking on my part. It harkens all the way back to sort of Reformation, the 1500s. There was a time where I think it was Calvinism talked about the elect and the damned, right? If God knows everything, God knows if you're going to go to heaven or hell. He already knows, right? And so it's almost like it doesn't matter what you do. And God, since he knows you're elect and you're headed to heaven, he takes care of you. He gives you good fortune in life, and he gives you money. And if you're not, then you're part of the damned. And that is such a deep-seated thing that trickles through and I think expresses itself in all sort of Ayn Randian philosophy, right? Ayn Rand, what is it? Ayn Rand, however you say your name, right? Is that, you know, the individual is the highest good. And that these guys like Rand Paul and these senators say that the least government is the best government because the government only exists to take money away from rich people and give it to poor people, right? The government functions as a redistribution of wealth from the well-to-do to the poor. And so that's what's written all over this tax bill, right? It's taking care of the wealthy, essentially an aristocracy, because they're good people and they should be protected. And that's just so, I mean, that's such a different playing field from what progressives talk about. It's like it's not even the same language. And how do you go back and forth and have a discussion with these people if the root belief is that money is proof of the blessing of the universe on your head? It's like, and you carry that forward. If the government is only designed to take away money from the people who, the good people who have made it, the same is true about climate stuff. I mean, so like Rand Paul says, well, the smallest government is the best government, right? Kill all the government because all it's doing is taking money away from these virtuous rich people. But all of climate work is the function of government that has to act in the common interest and will probably be redistributive of the wealth of the Donald Trumps of the world. And it's just like, holy moly. I mean, where are we going? I mean, maybe that's way too heavy. Does that sound at all sane? Am I like in my own little tin hat universe that this is insane stuff that I'm thinking? But I mean, how else do you explain the vindictiveness of this?
Well, to your point, back during the 2001 debate of the Bush 2001 tax cuts, Rush Limbaugh, day after day after day, would argue on his radio show that tax cuts were not an economic issue; they were a moral issue. That it was moral to make sure that those who had earned the money had more of their money, and it was not redistributed. And again, connecting to that sort of logic, it was Limbaugh who peddled the notion that Al Gore invented climate change to have the government redistribute wealth. So again, you see how that logical, so-called logical thread ties in with both the tax policy and energy and climate policy.
Yeah, I mean, there's a thing. What got me going today was there was a thing in the New York Times. I'll try and put up the link. It basically saying similar things to what I was just saying about the sort of way down deep fundamental beliefs that are hidden well below the language that we use to talk to each other. And I think what it calls for is for an explicit statement that you believe, or I believe, Ted believes, that everyone is basically equally good, that you're an American by choice and not by blood, that no one gets a special cut, that there's nobody, you know, I guess you go right to the point, there's nobody in a big mansion up in the sky who already knows what your fate is, right? That's just that's just a belief. And I don't know, Mariah, what, you tell me, talk me off, talk me back down from the window frame here.
this is good stuff. I would say this links in a little bit, but you know, the thing about this, the trickle down economics is really hard for me to digest because there is no proof. In fact, there is a lot of proof that trickle down economics does not work, that when you, when you give tax cuts to the wealthy CEOs, that they just keep it for themselves. They just use it more for themselves, that it does not, they do not create more jobs out of it. And, you know, I think an interesting aspect of that, to me, it seems like as you give more money to some of these wealthy CEOs who then can buy the political channels and affect voting outcomes, you know, it's definitely leading more and more to sort of not government by the people. We are certainly losing our democracy in a lot of this because you have money and corporations that are controlling the direction of our politics. And the only thing that gives me hope a little bit is that I think, you know, Facebook needs to get their stuff together in terms of
Russia.
Well, exactly. But you know, this sort of new social networking and ability to spread word through, you know, our own networks, does put some of the power back into the people, right? It used to be that politicians, if they could spend a bunch of money to get an ad spot on TV, that's how they got their message out. Well, now you can get, politicians can get their messages out through an email campaign or through a social networking campaign and so on and so forth. And that takes some of the money, not right. Totally.
No, I mean, it democratizes in many ways the challenge. But I mean, I just mean we're all talking about the 2018 election, and I guess I need to say it as well, that somehow we think the 2018 election is going to proceed without the influence of Vladimir Putin, that the Russians are not going to come in and try and screw things up again. And you know they are, right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea that we're going to have a fair, free and fair election in 2018, you know, unless we insist on it, is I think, this is what Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is the biggest, psychologically projecting, right? Whatever's in his head, he's worried about. He's putting out. He's too psychologically screwed up to recognize that it's his own internal worries that he's making external. But he talked to the whole campaign about the election being rigged, right? And it's because he knew he had rigged it, right? I say, oh yeah, the 2018 election might be rigged by Russia, I feel like I'm demeaning the process. But man, you got to look carefully at it. Let me say one other thing since I'm on my soapbox, and then I'll climb down and take a cold shower or something. But the idea that what's going to happen, and I'm sure you've seen the tweets and things, is that once they pass this tax bill, then I think in the mind of the people that are driving, the McConnells and Ryans of the world, then the tax issue has been redressed fairly, and the people that deserve the tax cuts got them. And so now you can turn your attention to the deficit, which is enormous, but now you have to resolve the deficit by cutting Social Security and Medicare, right? And that's the good thing to do. That's the right thing to do. It's because the takers are the ones that are demanding Social Security. They need to be stymied in their exploitation of the rich. And so, as they say, these deficits that the tax bill is creating is not it's a feature of the program. It's what they want, because then they're going to turn around and in their own mind, the tax system is now fair and we need to resolve the entitlements and then they will have achieved the nirvana of Ayn Randism. Anyway, all we can do is make sure the Russians don't mess with the election and that we all get out and put that vote in, right?
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. All right. I'm going to stop talking for a minute. And Mariah, I'm going to put it to you. You tell a story about the climate caucus and ask DR what he thinks. Okay. Just because I need to stop for a minute.
Take a deep breath.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm meditating while we talk. Right. All right. So there was the Climate Solutions Caucus is, composed of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans that are getting together to work on climate issues, right? It has to be one Democrat, one Republican. It was started by Carlos Curbelo, from Florida. And there's quite a scuffle over the fact that a lot of those Republicans that are on that Climate Solutions Caucus voted for this tax bill. And, you know, because this tax bill is so bad for climate change, you know, opening up a portion of the Anwar for drilling and, basically preserving a lot of measures that allow the oil and gas producers to, you know, reduce taxable income. So these Republicans are getting a lot of flack because they certainly did not vote in the interest of climate change. And there are some people who say that that the whole Climate Solutions Caucus should be disbanded and they should be kicked off, that they're not really voting for climate issues. So maybe I'll bat it to DR, although I do know that, you know, that I have sort of a counterpoint to that. But DR, what else was your interpretation from that?
It's interesting, and there's a great piece in Think Progress about this and how climate activists are basically saying that the fact that 24 Republican members of the Climate Solutions Caucus voted for this basically proves that these Republican members are basically phony climate hawks, and that they should be challenged by actual climate hawks. And it does raise the question of whether or not the House Climate Solutions Caucus will effectively collapse if in 2018 there's, you know, the 24 Republican members who voted for this tax cut bill are voted out of office. I think I guess you can say that the devil's advocate defense of this to the extent there is one, is that, well, two defenses is that, number one, presumably the 24 members of the House Constitutions Caucus, including Representative Curbelo, who the Republican head of the caucus who voted for it, they may have felt threatened by either donors or right-wing activists if they didn't vote for the bill. And number two, the idea that even Republicans who recognize that climate change is a problem, they're still going to be deferential to the idea of the merits of what George H.W. Bush called voodoo economics. And it does, as mentioned previously, raise the question of whether that embrace of voodoo economics will be a voodoo curse for those Republican members in the 2018 midterms.
And, you know, it seems, I mean, I know that the majority of the country, more than the majority of the country, does now, you know, think that climate change is important and we need to act on it. But it strikes me that it's not a high priority for a lot of people, that they sort of, you know, so a lot of the constituents in some of these Republicans, the districts that these Republicans represent, the constituents do care about climate change, but not as much as they may care about other core Republican issues. Mm-hmm. And I think that I would imagine that these folks are sort of banking on the fact that, you know, voting against climate change is not going to lose them their constituency. But who knows? But then it's sort of as a counterpoint, you know, I guess there was as they talk about disbanding it, I sort of say, well, but I do want this to be a bipartisan issue. This shouldn't be partisan, right? Climate action is something that should be really important to everyone. In 2017, there was an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act that would have struck out all references to climate change, and the Climate Solutions Caucus came together and they basically stopped climate change from being struck from that act. So they did do something. There was some working together there that had an effect. And I get torn between saying, well, I don't want to lose those important moments where they are saying that it's important to them and they are doing some actions toward it. But I also sort of say, yeah, but if they're ultimately just sort of using it as a front for something they don't actually believe in, you know, when it comes down to it, they don't actually make votes toward climate change solutions. Maybe it shouldn't be there. So I'm real torn about it.
Yeah, and it's like you can't have the perfect be the enemy of the good, but at the same time, you don't want to provide cover for someone cynically using the issue. I don't know. It's a tough one. Mm-hmm. Well, I think, look, we've tried the patience of our dear listeners for a little over 20 minutes now. So we need, what we'll do is try and put up links to some of the things we talked about. If you have an opinion about whether or not the Climate Solutions Caucus should be disbanded or applauded, let us know. We'll put up the links to most of what we talk about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at @massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and most other directories. And of course, you can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here, Mariah.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to my fever swamp ranting. I really appreciate you taking the time. We'll be back again next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.